All right. Good morning.
So this is our third week in our series following Jesus with the gifts that God has given to us. So far we've discussed following Jesus with our time. Alec came and spoke to us about that. And then last week, Dr. Abram came and spoke on following Jesus with the talents and the spiritual gifts that we have been given. And so this week, we're going to talk about using the money that God has given to us. Our church has been around for almost 2.5 years, and this is the first sermon that will be preached on money. And studying this passage this week it's just been a gut punch for me personally. Over the past month or so, Desiree and I have been trying to map out our financial situation, especially as we plan next year to start the adoption process. And we've been thinking through getting ready for that. And does that mean we need to get a new house or get new cars or whatever? And so we've been dreaming. We've been dreaming about what the next phase of our life will look like. We've been looking at houses and seeing, oh, could we live there? What would that look like? Start looking at cars. And I don't think there's anything wrong with dreaming about the future. But I think there's a real temptation in that, and there has been for us at times, to be discontent with the things that God has given us now. And so this passage has just been a wake-up call for me. And I hope it will be for you if this is something that you've been struggling with as well. I hope it will be. We need this reminder, especially in our culture, especially as we're inundated with so much of our culture just screaming that everything is about money, and so much that is screaming the opposite of contentment. And the disease of just more and more, that's what our culture preaches nonstop. And so we need this truth of the Bible to counteract that. So we're in 1 Timothy chapter 6, and we're starting in verse 6 through 10. It says, in verse 6, it says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we had food and clothing with these, we will be content." That's through verse 8. So if we back up just a little bit before these verses, we see Paul, he is in his letter to Timothy, he is calling out and condemning the false teachers that were teaching there with Timothy. They were around them, and they were twisting the gospel to enrich themselves. And the fruit of the teaching of the twisting of the gospel in verse 4, it says, it was envy, dissension, slander, evil suspiciousness, and constant friction in the church. And so the antidote for that is verse 6. It's godliness or Christ-likeness, the fruit of the Spirit, along with contentment. And those two things together aren't something that we do to get rewarded. That's not something that you live out so that you get bonuses. That is the reward itself. That is the great gain. The false teachers of Paul and Timothy's day, as well as ours, would teach that if you follow what God says, follow what they said, God will bless you financially. But Paul makes it clear that God has promised nothing like that. And the key to understanding biblical principles of handling money is that everything is about having an eternal perspective. And it says that in verse 7. So we didn't enter into the world with anything, and we won't take anything out with us. But how we handle it matters, because it is all about how God is using money to shape us. Paul has been on every side of the financial spectrum, and he calls us to be content, even if it's just the very basics of food and clothing that are met. And in America, in our culture, especially today, man, we have some insane ideas of what the basics are. The average new house build in America is almost 2,400 square feet right now, which is over 150% of what it was 100 years ago. It used to be 1,050 or so. It's over 2,400, which is just crazy. The average new car loan is $745 a month. And even for a used car, it's $500 a month. We are richer today than any society has been in the history of the world. The average person in America is richer today than the kings of ancient history. But even if you're in a financial position that you wish you weren't, I think there is still quite a bit that you can look around in your life and be grateful to God for. Comparison is the thief of joy. And looking at other what others have takes away our focus from being grateful for things, the things that God has given to us. I love looking at Zillow. I love house shopping. I think that's really fun. I'm always interested in just poking. Me and my mom and my brother have group texts that we send probably 30 houses a week to each other, just looking at things we want to do. We want to eventually do a big family compound and everything, and that's a hobby for me. I actually hate car shopping. That's weirdly, I never like looking at cars. Even when I have to, that's always a chore for me. But I love looking at house shopping. I love imagining what my life would look like if I lived in a specific spot. And I think by that self, it's fine, but it becomes a problem for me, and it has, when looking causes me to be discontent with God, what God has given me, and the situation that he's placed me in now. And it's not optional. It's not if you're rich, you're called to contentment. 100% of us are called to contentment. 100% of us are called to steward the money that God has given to us, whether that's a lot or a little. And 100% of us are called to be generous. Let's pick up in verse 9. It says, "But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs." So verse 7 says that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. And I think there are three ways this passage identifies the way that the love of money can pull us away from our walk with Jesus. I think the first one is the temptation of pride that comes with money. Whoops. I think I'm mixed up here. The temptation of pride, it comes in kind of two main forms, I think. It's the temptation to think that we're better than someone else because we have more money. Most of us would never admit to thinking that way. We would all say that that's not true, but it's a real temptation. It's easy for us, especially in America, to use wealth as an indicator of who has wisdom and who has God's favor, and to view it as like a high score, as the score by which we judge how well a person is living their life. You need to examine your own mind to make sure that you don't do this. We often can't see the full picture. Sometimes people struggle with money because of sin or a lack of wisdom. But other times, it's external circumstances that God is allowing a person to go through for purposes that we can't see. I think of the story of Job in the Old Testament. Job has a bunch of money, loses it all, and all of his friends are looking for a sin that Job has committed to be the reason why Job has lost all of his possessions. And we know, we have the view that God is working in Job's life to teach him something. God is also working in his life for purposes beyond Job's, what Job even knows. And it's the same that's true of people who are wealthy. Sometimes it is wisdom and it's sound biblical principles that got them to where they are. And sometimes it's taking advantage of others. I think one of our favorite Christmas traditions, every year we watch It's a Wonderful Life. One of my favorite movies. It's the only old movie I really watch. And there's this contrast in the story of It's a Wonderful Life of Mr. Potter, who is this rich but miserly old man who takes advantage of people. He has people living in his slums, and he takes advantage. And then there's George Bailey, who is kind of the hero of the story. He is constantly sacrificing of himself to his own financial detriment, giving towards others. And the end of the story, it makes me tear up every time. At the end, George he needs money. And all of his friends, they come and they give him over I think, $8,000 is how much he needed, and it's way more than that they come and give. But his brother comes back from war, and he says at the end, "To my big brother, George, the richest man in town." And so, I love that story. I just I get emotional even thinking about that. It makes me tear up every time. The way that we see wealth, we don't always have the full picture. And so we have to be careful not to assume much about a person's character due to their financial position. It is not our job to have eyes on everyone else's paper and to be judging and be looking around. And it, I don't want you to walk away from this thinking that you need to be suspicious of everyone who has wealth. You don't need to think about that part of them at all. You also don't need to, you can just look at them, look at all those around you with the way that Jesus did. So I think that's one temptation of wealth, to think that we're better than someone else. The other temptation is to think that we don't need to rely on God. Jesus, he addresses this mentality in a parable in Luke 12. It says, someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbiter over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and I will store all my grain and goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you. The things that you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up for himself treasure and is not rich toward God.'" We don't know what our life is going to hold. In some sense, life is short, and we have just a moment on this earth to live our life and make the choices that we're going to make. But in some sense, it's also kind of long, in the sense that we don't know which way our lives are going to go. We may be blessed now, and we may not be in 5 years from now. Our reliance on God during that time can't change. So the second temptation, I think, of having money is the vices that are available with wealth. And I think this is kind of an obvious one. Some sins cost money, and having wealth and wanting to display it opens up a person to temptations that were not there previously. But money doesn't make a person behave a certain way. Money reveals and magnifies the character that was already there. A generous person will be extra generous, but a person without self-control will go off the deep end. The temptation, I think the third temptation, is the temptation to sin in order to get wealth. And this is the problem that Paul has identified with the false teachers earlier in this passage. And in business, I frequently see opportunities to take advantage of customers or situations to make more money. And in a lot of cases, nobody would ever find out. There would be no consequences. There's nobody out there like policing all this stuff. People do horrible things in business all the time to get money. I see it all the time. And if we operate that way out in the world, we are denying Jesus with our actions, which is even worse if we're still giving lip service to him. If you profess to be a Christian in your workplace, which you should be open about your faith, you should be sharing with others. But if you do that and then turn around and lie, cheat, or steal to get wealthier, you are preaching a false gospel to your coworkers. We should preach the gospel to those around us with both our actions and our words. But if our actions don't align with our words, then we'll do more harm than if we said nothing at all. And after these verses, kind of in between, Paul charges Timothy to live a life in contrast to the false teachers and those that desire to be rich. So he goes through that for a couple verses. And then in verse 17, he turns his attention back towards those who were already rich in the church. In verse 17, it says, "As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy." The beginning of verse 17 serves as a reminder for us. Rich in this present age is a reminder that the wealth doesn't last beyond this age. And that these Christians, they're no better or worse than others. But they do have this added responsibility that the rest of these verses lay out for us. This is also another call to be humble and to rely on God. He is the creator of the universe and the sustainer of life. And ultimately, any credit for earthly success that we have goes to him. And it is at his pleasure. He has the ultimate perspective. And if God determined that it was better for us to struggle here on earth so that we could become more like him, he could take all of our earthly success away in a moment. It is his to give and it is his to take away. Romans 8:28 says, "And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose." And it's that idea that whatever God is doing in your life, he is using it to work on you. And sometimes that is good for you in the short term, and sometimes it's not. But it is for your ultimate good. And the ultimate good is that God is glorified through you and that you grow to be more like him. So verse 18 back in Timothy says, "They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, and to be ready to share." The rich have a responsibility to use what God has given them to bless others and to point them to Jesus. Look for opportunities to bless those around you. Take care of the people that God has placed in your path, and do so while giving God the credit and not yourself. The Bible talks a lot about giving anonymously. This is one of those ways that you can point to God and give him the credit. Jesus says in Matthew 6, verses 3 through 4, says, "But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you." It doesn't have to be about giving necessarily to a charity half a world away. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that. If you support charities, that's awesome. But there are people in your life right now that are in your path that are struggling financially, and you have an opportunity to help them. I think about it in terms of the way that Jesus talked about the Great Commission in our Judea, in our Samaria, in our Jerusalem. In our area right around us, there are people with needs that we can meet. People around us have both spiritual needs and physical needs. And Jesus often throughout his ministry would meet the physical need first before meeting the spiritual. And we can follow his example by doing the same. Sometimes people they're worried about their next meal and they can't think about the gospel. They can't think about those things. They're just worried about how they're going to feed their kids or how they're going to get them to school the next day or clothe them. And we have opportunities to allow them to free them up to think about something beyond that. Being rich sometimes means that it's not necessarily money that we have to give. It's that you are freed up because you're not worried about your next meal. You're freed up to give of your time in a way that somebody else might not be. And then being ready to share means that you are looking for opportunities around you. So you have to be observant. You have to be paying attention. And it also means that you're financially prepared to give. I think this is something that we don't talk a ton about, and I don't think it's mandatory to like set a budget or anything, but it can really be helpful. A lot of us, I think about when Desiree and I first got married, I went from, when I was in college, I was making like $8.50 an hour, making nothing. Like it was less than $10,000 a year. And when we got married, she was a teacher and I had started a full-time job, and it felt like more money than we had ever seen in our life. We had a really cheap rent at the time and we kind of just did things on autopilot. We did not budget. We did not plan because there was enough. And I think about that and regret, because there are so many, if we were more purposeful, there are so many opportunities that we could have had to save for the future more, sure, but also to be generous. We didn't get serious about that until a couple years later, and I think of just the wasted time that we had. So set aside, if you're somebody that budgets, I would definitely recommend it. Set aside a portion each month at the beginning of the month that you're saying, I'm going to give this money away. Whatever it is, I'm going to look for an opportunity to give this away. Even if that is, if you're a college student, if you're a high schooler, you've got a part-time job, even if that's $5 for Starbucks. To send to a friend that you know needs it. Set that aside at the beginning of the month. And then save up for larger opportunities to bless one. Have to plan that out. That means having a financial, having a handle on your finances. And you may be like where we were. You have enough coming in that you don't really have to worry about it. But you may be misusing what God has given you and squandering opportunities to give. And setting aside that money at the beginning of the month with the determination that you're going to give it away will open you up to looking for opportunities around you. And God, he wants to work in your heart for you to be generous. And I think this is a practical way that we can kind of help ourselves think on his wavelength. Think the way that he does. See people the way that he sees them. And I'm not really even talking about giving money to church here. We've never really talked about that. I don't think that's really what these verses are about. Our church, obviously, we appreciate the support that we get. And we're going to talk about that a little bit after the service. But this is about being generous with what God is giving you and looking for opportunities to practice generosity. We serve a heavenly Father that is sovereign over the universe. He owns everything, and there is more than enough to go around. And so if God has blessed you with money now, now isn't the time to hoard it. We can rely on him. We can trust him. And we can understand that we have an added responsibility to be generous. In verse 19, it says, "Thus storing up treasure for themselves is a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of what is truly life." Storing up treasure, the Bible uses that terminology a lot. I think it's a way to help us picture kind of where we're investing, what we're using our time and our talents and our money for. But that's not about having a big pile of money in heaven. Like, that's kind of ridiculous when you think about it. Like, we're not going to need it. We'll be fine. It's about God using our current financial situation to make us more like him. So as the earlier verses were talking about, we come into this world with nothing except ourselves. We leave with nothing except who we are. Our spirit, our inner man, that's who comes with us. And that's what God is doing. He's working on you to make him more like Jesus. That's the point of whether we have a lot or a little in our life. And so we have to have an eternal perspective. But if you don't know Jesus, you can't have an eternal perspective. There's no reason to think beyond just storing up as much as you can to enjoy as much as you can here on earth. We can only have this mentality because we believe in the gospel, because we know we have a future in heaven with Jesus, and because we know that he has enough and he's taking care of everything. So if you don't know him, you can't have that mentality. So I encourage you, if you don't know him, come talk to one of us. If you have questions about how do I have this mentality, how do I think beyond just the here and now, come talk to Matt or I. We would love to have a conversation with you about that. So I think this is a pretty simple passage. There's not a ton here that is groundbreaking, but that idea that God has taken care of us, and whatever he has given to us now, we have a responsibility to use it well, to use it to point others to Jesus, and we can do that on purpose. We can do that through our planning, and we can look for opportunities. No matter how much money we have, we can still carve out some so that we can look for opportunities to bless others, to provide for some of their physical needs, and to point them to Jesus. Let's pray. Father,